Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
And happy Saturday. Hope you're having a great start to your weekend. You might just be getting your day started, or you might be in your car driving around running some errands. My name is Ji Suk Yi. G, just like the letter G for short. I've been at WGN Radio for about 3 months now, so I consider it a privilege and an honor to be here with you on a Saturday. I've never been here on a Saturday in studio before, so it's fantastic. Also to be in for the great King John Williams, filling in for him today for 2 hours until noon. And so I'm so happy to be able to keep you guys company as you're getting your weekend started. And also so excited to be here with Griffin. I've never worked with Griffin before. Yeah,
welcome.
Thanks for having me. And then, of course, Maple Walker.
Good morning.
Hello, darling.
Hi.
A fabulous job on the news. And
Thank you.
Mr. Joe Brand. These are some great names. I feel like you guys have the market on the best names in the business.
Well, I mentioned it earlier. I never liked my name growing up in school. I thought it was too short. It sounded too old. Then I got in the industry and everyone's like, oh, what a great name. Okay, now I like it.
This is a superstar name, I think, both of you. Seriously.
Thank you.
Yeah, superstar, wow.
Yes, yes, yes.
So if you don't become superstars, it's on you.
That's quite a standard.
The name did what it could.
Wow. Griff, your voice is a little bit like your father's. I just realized on the radio voice. Nice.
I've heard that, yeah. Thank you.
Very nice. Yeah, the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. You guys aren't sick of any Halloween stories, right? Because I have a good one for you. I promise you're going to enjoy it. And I also know that a lot of neighborhoods, because of the terrible weather, ended up pushing trick-or-treating until tonight. So I think for the first half hour, I've got some time. So if you want to call in, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200, give me a call. Would love to get to know you a little better. Tell me if your neighborhood is doing trick-or-treating tonight. So here's the story. It comes out of the state of Maryland. And, you know, people do trick-or-treating very different ways. I mean, do you dress up and...
Do I trick-or-treat?
Yeah.
No.
Give out candy? Like?
Oh, no.
No. That's happening?
Not in my neighborhood. They have things where kids go into businesses and stuff.
Gotcha.
A little bit, and maybe hit some houses, but I'm in an apartment. We don't.
Okay, got it. Maple, Joe, any of you guys?
No, I'm out of this conversation. I don't celebrate, so I'm out.
Oh, gotcha, yeah. Joe.
I live in an apartment, so
okay.
Yeah.
Got it. Well, I know there's a lot of neighborhoods that are doing trick-or-treating tonight, and there's different methods.
And the weather, I guess, is part of that, like you said.
Right.
But it just seems like it's been the longest Halloween season of all time.
Well,
because I was out last night, and not just trick-or-treaters, but people, adults were dressed up still, and I was like, oh, wow.
That's a whole other story.
Feels like it's been like 3 weeks.
Yeah, that's a whole other story when adults are dressing up for Halloween. That can be an entire hour-long conversation as to whether that should happen. But there's different methods of handing out candy. Some people dress up and hand out candy when trick-or-treaters come and ring the doorbell on the front porch or on the deck. But some people just leave a bowl of candy outside, sort of like a self-serve jack-o'-lantern usually, and kids just come up and get the candy out of the bowl. Now, you might think that this is a lazy way of greeting your trick-or-treaters, but it's really not, because a lot of parents have young kids of their own and they need to be out trick-or-treating. So that's how a lot of parents manage to also greet trick-or-treaters, by leaving a light on and having a self-serve candy bowl out on their deck. So this was happening in Maryland. Jackson Champagne, that's his name, another fantastic name like Maple and Joe's, 8 years old, was about to experience the worst Halloween nightmare for a trick-or-treater. He goes up to the deck. The light is on. There's a beautiful, jack-o'-lantern bowl. And he sticks his hand in the bowl, and there's no candy. Well, you can imagine, for most kids, that would be pretty sad, and they'd complain. But without saying a word, Jackson reached into his very own bag of candy and decided to share the candy that he had, and he put his own candy into the self-serve bowl. That way, other kids that came after him would have candy, too.
I never would have done that.
Joe. G.
Yes.
G.
Yes.
You know, we're going to have some words because you totally took my national story.
Oh, you did? I am so sorry.
It's all good.
Oh,
it's
no.
all good. I'm glad we're on the same track.
You know what? Maple is going to give more details, and I'm going to stop talking about the story right now.
Talk about the story. Mm. Talk about it.
Well, the parents said that Jackson is a pretty incredible kid, and when he was asked, why did you do this? He said, for the kids after me. So thoughtful. And they also said, the parents, that Jackson gives a box of his toys each year at the holidays to kids in need. And he and his dad had talked about giving more this season. So what an incredible kid. And I think as we approach, because I know when November hits, everything starts going in fast forward, because once Halloween is over, then it gets cold, then it's November, then it's Thanksgiving, and then before you know it, it's holiday season. And I feel like you run around like a crazy person trying to get everything done. And but it's also a season to think about others and a way to pay it forward. What do you guys think?
I think this kid has to cool it because he's making us all look very bad.
I was kind of reminded of a time in my childhood where, I don't know, it's not the opposite exactly, but these take one things can be contentious. The take one bowls and the honor system. My parents did that one year, and then me and my friends, like 10 of us, went to my door, and they were like, it's your house. We can do whatever we want,
oh,
right?
No.
And I felt very pressured. Looking back, I was so weak. I don't know why.
So you fell for peer pressure and
like,
took all the candy?
Yeah, do whatever you want.
Oh, Griff.
I didn't. Well, I don't know. I probably did. But I wouldn't have, but I was pressured into it. And then my mom was like, what the hell? Like, they came back like 30 minutes later or something and had to go get some more or something.
Oh, my God. Did they ever find out it was you?
I completely forgot about that, by the way, until I saw this kid.
I expect, you know, I actually want this done live on air. I want you to call your father and confess what you did.
No, they knew. No, they knew.
Okay. Well, at least you came clean about it. But
I guess, yeah.
The Jackson's father is actually a county firefighter, and the mom, the reason why she was gone for the trick-or-treaters was because she had to take his three-year-old sister out trick-or-treating. But the only way that they saw all this happen was because there was a security camera. Oh, that wasn't the firefighter wasn't Jackson's father, but the people that owned the home where Jackson did this gift of kindness. So I think that's a pretty cool story.
Oh, yeah. And a texter mentioned that he was walking away and then he saw somebody else coming up to get the candy, and that's when he drops some in.
Google the video. It will make your day, and it'll just make your weekend even brighter. But the sun is out. It looks great. It looks like a great day. Michigan Avenue doesn't look too busy, so I think a lot of people can get out there and get a lot of stuff done. But we are going to take a break right now. Welcome back to the John Williams Show. This is G Suki, or just G, filling in for King John today. Happy November. Happy Saturday. I know today is November 2nd, but you know how there's all of these national holiday celebration? I feel like they're mostly these made-up holidays for social media so people can post photos that go along with them and to fake celebrate something. But I wanted to go over a couple of them. Yesterday, Friday, November 1st, was National Calzone Day. National Cook for Your Pets Day. I don't know. I only know two people that cook for their pets. National Men Make Dinner Day. Joe, Griff, did you guys make dinner?
No.
Yes, but not because of the holiday, because I like to cook and I cook dinner. I think that's sexist.
Oh, it is a bit sexist. I would completely agree with you. Mm-hmm, I totally agree.
As a man who doesn't cook at all, I think it's fine.
You're terrible for our demographic, right?
Okay, Joe, what did you make last night?
Okay, well, last night maybe I didn't cook, but I did cook this week. I'm a big soup guy with the fall happening. I like to make a lot of different soups. Just anything to clear out the fridge with chicken or fish or vegetables. We got an air fryer. Love the air fryer.
Nice.
Just trying to make some healthy options here and there.
See, I think you're a real cook because real cooks can take whatever they have in the pantry and the fridge and toss it together and make something delicious.
Yeah, I'm kind of in the mode now where I hate letting anything go to waste. And I know it's a good thing, but it's kind of like a problem. Like I have half a jar of salsa. So I'm like, okay, what can I make with this half jar of salsa? And I'll go to the grocery store and buy five other things so I can empty out that jar of salsa.
Well, that's better. You're doing better than me because what I do is I go to the grocery, buy a ton of groceries, then bring it home, and then I'll order Grubhub or DoorDash or you know, Uber Eats. And then my produce will just sit in my fridge forever. And then eventually I'm like, oh, I never used it. I've got to get my life together. Anyway, yes, that is sexist. I would agree with you, Joe. Also, yesterday was National Vinegar Day.
Ugh.
So, not a pickle fan?
I like pickles, but yeah, I don't associate that with just vinegar, but I guess
balsamic vinegar for your salad.
That's true. That's true. The one I hate apple cider vinegar.
Oh, got it. There is that the vinegar that people say if you drink a couple of tablespoons a
yes,
day.
Yes. That is the vinegar.
Do you do this?
I do.
Oh. And how has it worked for you? You seem very healthy.
I try.
How often do you do it?
Okay, so I don't do it every day.
Okay.
But I will probably do it like once or twice a week.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, it does. It helps your like gastro. And
yeah.
Yeah. All
see,
that good
it's
stuff.
Definitely a holistic mm-hmm. thing. I've heard people really mm-hmm. do it. And they also drink a glass of water with lemon in the morning to start their day.
Yep. Ginger. Mm-hmm. Ginger tea.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. It's good to be healthy. Think about your health. Also, especially with the cold season coming up. Also, today, I'm going to give you some national holidays that are today, Saturday, November 2nd. Of course, we're wrapping up Day of the Dead. It's also National Bison Day, like buffalo bison. National Deviled Egg Day.
Oh, I love deviled eggs.
I love deviled eggs.
Yes.
Wait,
do you like the deviled eggs with the paprika on it?
Oh, that's how we make them
I love
in
it.
My household.
Yes, it has to have the paprika sprinkled on it.
Sorry to backtrack, but mm-hmm. how do you celebrate National Bison Day?
That I don't know. These are all very good questions, Joe.
I feel like if you were to eat a bison burger, that'd be counterintuitive.
But you just reflect on bison.
But this is what I'm telling you guys. These are made up holidays, made up for social media. But people love them. Because today, I guarantee you, on Instagram or Facebook, someone's going to be talking about making deviled eggs because it's National Deviled Egg Day.
But there is some process you have to go through, right, to get some designation of it being a holiday? Or do you just have to know somebody at one of these websites
that
makes
I don't know.
These lists?
I don't know.
There's a whole thing.
And, of course, tomorrow is Daylight Saving Day because, you know, the clocks fall back.
That's right.
I say tonight because that, to me, makes sense. Just layman's terms, but I know technically it's Sunday morning.
It's really a constant reminder every two times a year how stupid I am with that these things like tie a knot in my brain. I'm like, when and what?
Exactly.
How many times does it have to happen that I'll wrap my head around it?
And I know you're probably going to get sick of being reminded by everybody, but I'm the person that gets reminded by everyone, and then I forget to do it right before
I was going to say, the iPhone has done wonders because mm-hmm. everything is so digital now, and it updates on its own. Now you're just left with the microwave and the stove to update.
And tomorrow, just FYI, is also National Sandwich Day. So you should go out and make a sandwich to go with your deviled eggs that you make today.
Yeah, I'm rolling Sandwich Day in with Men Cooking Day. We're kind of celebrating both on the one. So
call 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Would love to get to know you and take a call. I find November... The beginning of November is very crazy for me because I feel like this is when the holiday season starts. There's parties, there's events, there's charity events because everyone is wanting to push for donations before the end of the year.
Yep.
And I want to hear from someone that's already done their holiday shopping, that feels prepared, is excited about the season that's upcoming, and that never feels rushed.
Is that you?
No, that is not me. Mm. I am the person that is ordering things on Amazon, you know, two nights before Amazon Prime trying to get it delivered.
I'm good with like a few of my relatives, but then everything else is totally last minute.
I don't buy the people in my life know well enough to not expect much anyway.
Just set the bar very low right from the get-go.
That's important. That's really important. So,
well, I know that there are people out there that have all of their shopping done, have all the preparations, feel prepared for Thanksgiving dinner that's coming up as well. They've got it under control. So I always think that they're pretty amazing. Also, we've got... we have a couple of really awesome people coming into studio today that I wanted to tell you about. We've got a couple of folks from Found Footage Festival. We have Joe Pickett and Nick Prewer. And if you haven't heard of this festival, don't worry. I hadn't either. It's a really cool festival, American Film Festival, and it's also a live comedy event that's featuring unusual and humorous found footage clips and films. It's going to be at the Music Box. Basically, think about all of those VHS tapes that you have. And, of course, everybody has a ton of VHS tapes. They have, of course, vinyls have made a comeback. So everyone is actually going and buying actual records and vinyls. But in terms of VHS and DVDs and CDs, they kind of just sit in these giant boxes in a corner of my apartment collecting dust. So... I don't know about you guys, but these guys find lost footage and they've turned it into a festival. So I know that that sounds really interesting. Well, let's take a quick break now. Welcome back to the John Williams Show. This is Jisoo Ki, or just G, in for John, King John today. I'm very excited. I have really cool, two cool dudes in here, Mr. Joe Pickett and Mr. Nick Prewer from the Found Footage Festival. And instead of me explaining what Found Footage Festival is, I'm just going to... Joe, tell me what it is.
The Found Footage Festival is a... Nick and I have known each other since we were in sixth grade.
Okay.
And we're from a small town in Wisconsin. Not a lot going on.
Mm-hmm.
And we collected VHS... We've collected VHS tapes our entire lives. So what we do, the Found Footage Festival, is a guided tour through our collection of... our weird collection of VHS tapes. And it's not like movies so much. It's more like exercise videos... training videos, safety videos.
Other people's home movies we find in camcorders. Anything that wasn't meant to be shown in public, we showed in public and give our live commentary throughout.
And right now, like, thrift stores are just flooded with VHS tapes. You know, everybody got rid of them. Yeah.
People don't know what to do with them.
No.
And also, people want to keep them because they feel like it's footage that they need.
Yeah.
But then they don't know how to transfer the footage over.
No.
Because that's costly.
Exactly.
So it just sits there until somebody decides, hey, this is finally going to...
Well, and we find home movies at thrift stores, too, because of that. You know, like, when people got camcorders back in the 80s and 90s, they didn't know what to record. So they would usually record kids opening up birthday presents or something. It's usually boring. But sometimes we find people's actual home movies. And actually, in our show tonight, we show four of them. And they're actually the only four exciting home movies in the world.
Occasionally we'll find a good one, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so guys, we really need to sell this.
Oh, yeah,
because
the
way you're describing it right now.
I know.
So you want me to come to your show where you're going to show found home footage.
Well,
home
movie some home movies.
So how good is this footage?
Oh, it's hilarious. I mean, it's
okay.
A comedy show.
It's fine. I wouldn't go out of your way for it.
No, we're trying to...
We're from the Midwest. We downplay everything, G. Come on. No, this is footage you can't see anywhere else. It's crazy stuff that will leave your jaw agape.
Describe.
So we have a video. This year we do an exercise video montage every year. And this year we limited ourselves to just taking exercise videos that in some way bastardize the word exercise. So we've got skier size.
We call them earth size videos.
Yeah. We've got one called baby size, which is how to exercise your fat baby. You know?
There's a praiser size, which is a religious exercise video. Yeah.
And anything in between. And it's just, it's all the leotard and spandex you would expect, but just even more insane. Because we've got one called breathe size, which is doing, breath exercises. There's one called eroticize. So that, hey, if that doesn't sell tickets, what does?
I'm envisioning these home movies to look something similar to an SNL skit when they do skits about jazzercise or...
Oh, yeah, yeah. When you watch these things, it's just like they... Because there was no self-awareness back then. You know, now we're so self-aware. But back then, people were not self-aware. They were so excited to be on the camera.
Well, the other thing, I mean, we mentioned these are videos you can't see anywhere else on the internet or anywhere. I mean, they're physical media.
That's our rule. You have to find it physically in hand.
But the other thing is because there was such a glut of VHS in the 80s and 90s, there were hyper-specific videos that got released that you wonder who they were for. Like, we found a video called How Do I Identify Machine-Made Marbles?
You know, one of the best ones we found is actually in Chicago. It's called Rent-A-Friend. And it's a video. It's 45 minutes, and it's this guy talking to you, and he'll ask you questions, and then he leaves a pause so that you can answer back to him. And the guy's actually from Chicago. We've met him before. And, yeah.
That was a high-concept video, where if you were lonely and you had a VCR, you could pop the tape in, and the man would be your virtual friend for about an hour.
It's similar to the movie Her, but instead of an AI person, it's a person.
It's analog. Yeah.
Yeah, he was way ahead of the game on that, yeah.
You two have been collecting VHS since you were young.
Since, well...
10 years old.
Well,
yeah.
Since high school. Nick stole a McDonald's training video in 1991. 1991, yeah.
They're still looking for that, by the way. I'm expecting a call at any moment.
The
from
feds
your...
are going to burst in.
I should never have admitted that on air, yeah. Yeah, we steal stuff occasionally, some footage. Of, you know, no one's going to miss it. No one has ever asked me for that McDonald's custodial training video back.
Oh, it's fascinating, though. Like, you probably had to watch training videos before, where everybody's enthusiastic to clean the bathrooms, you know, and like, that's what this McDonald's training video was, and that's when we fell in love with videos, like VHS.
But you were describing how to pinpoint a machine-made marble. When I think about that, I think about all the videos that are available via YouTube.
Yeah.
Because if you need to fix anything in your house, fix anything in your car, try to understand a mathematical equation. Whatever you need, there is probably a video of that.
Yeah.
So this was a precursor to...
Totally, yeah. And like in the 80s, like before the 80s, everything was shot on film. So it was kind of expensive, and you really had to plan your shoot. You had to do it well. But then once video comes along, it's cheaper. So anybody with a half-baked idea, like they want to make a Rent-A-Friend video, great. You hit the red button, you put a VHS in there, and it's so cheap to produce. So people were just crapping them out left and right. Exercise videos, too. So many exercise videos.
Now, do you find some of them, it sounds like, are professionally done, but a lot of them are just people in their home?
Oh, yeah, yeah. There's one that we have. It's called the First Annual Martin Carlton Stunt Special. And it's a guy and his brother in Ohio in their backyard, and one brother has the camcorder. The other brother is going to jump from one tree to another tree. And I think he anticipated this to be some sort of like big event that he's going to do annually, where he's going to do some sort of a stunt. And so he jumps from one tree to the other.
It doesn't go well.
It doesn't go well. I don't want to give away. Come to the show tonight, and you can see what happens to Martin Carlton.
There wasn't a second annual. Yeah. We'll say that. He's alive and well, but it wasn't.
I don't know if he's well. He's alive.
There wasn't a follow-up.
Oh, boy. But from all intents and purposes, from what you could watch, it seemed like he made it.
Yeah.
He's safe.
Oh, no, okay.
All right. Okay. I see. Yeah. It's a cliffhanger.
That's like the, yeah.
We have some Chicago footage, too. Like the other thing, you're mentioning people doing this in their homes, but also public access TV. A lot of this ended up on VHS. People taped it. And last time we were here, we met with our pals who run Bric-A-Brac Records here in town, and they had footage from a 1982 public access. Actually, it was a UHF show broadcast just for 13 weeks in the summer of 1982 on the south side here. And it was a dance show called the Chicago Party. And
it's incredible.
It's
really?
It's absolutely incredible.
What era do you think that this came from?
Well, it was 82. So 82, it was like post-disco, but they still had a lot of disco dancing.
Okay, so if anyone listening was part of the 1982 Chicago Dance Party, please call in 312-981-7200.
Yes. Oh, yeah. We want to know more about this show, too, because it wasn't on for very long.
Well, you know, talking to you two, it just hit me that all of this video footage, the only thing that changed from when people were making these videos is that now there's a way for us to share them to a mass amount of people via YouTube and social media. And that's how we're creating celebrities because of these videos. You guys could be sitting on some major gold mines.
Oh,
but
yeah.
They just didn't have the access of putting it onto YouTube.
Oh,
back
totally.
Then.
Yeah. Well, like,
the people in the videos are celebrities to us, and we try to track them down. You know, we try to meet them.
I was going to follow up and ask you about that.
Well, like Rent-A-Friend, like we knew he was from Chicago, and he was actually very easy to find. And now we're I would say we're close personal friends with Rent-A-Friend.
Yeah, we don't mean to brag, but...
Yeah, we don't mean to name drop here.
We don't have to rent him anymore. He's our actual friend.
Have you seen people with some real star power on these lost VHS?
Yeah, I think the most famous guy we found was a guy people call Winnebago Man. And
you heard of that guy?
No.
There was a video. It was one of the first viral videos, but we found it before that. It was a guy shooting a commercial about Winnebago RVs. And a guy, Jack Rebney, and he kept losing his cool during the taping, and the crew knew this, so they kept the cameras rolling in between takes and captured all his descent into madness, basically.
And his swearing is, it's almost poetic, the way this guy can swear. Like, the way he mixes swear words together, he's so angry that he just, his vernacular is incredible.
Oh, sounds like a very early Samuel L. Jackson.
Oh, yeah. Worse. 10 times worse.
Yeah. Goodness. Yeah. A balding white Samuel L. Jackson who's shooting an RV commercial in Iowa.
Not a little different, a lot different.
1989. And so, you know, the crew cut together their favorite, you know, angry tirades from this guy. We made our own version that we toured with in our first touring show in 2004. And then it went online and got big. And we wanted to find the guy, but we figured he's probably not around anymore.
We thought for sure he would, because he's so angry. We thought, like, heart attack or an ulcer got him. But no, he was alive and well. He was actually living in Northern California like a hermit.
A filmmaker tracked him down. They found him living there. When he heard that we were playing his video outtakes all around the country, he was pissed off about it, which shouldn't have surprised us, but somehow it still did.
So he's living and thriving and still angry.
Yes. Oh, yeah. He's
and
exactly...
wanting his percentage of the cut, right?
I'm sure.
Of money
you're making? But let's not... He won't hear this.
Okay,
so,
good.
Yeah.
Well, I'm talking to Joe Pickett and Nick Prewer of Found Footage Festival. I have to confess, I thought this whole idea was really strange, but now that they're here in studio talking with me... You're really selling it to me. And I have to say that I'm hooked and I have a lot more questions for you, but we're going to take a quick break. So stay with us. This is a VHS clip from a dating service found by Found Footage Festival.
Okay, early to bed, early to rise makes a woman healthy, wealthy, and wise. That's why you're wiser than me. It's Stephen.
Hi, I'm Maurice. I'm an executive by day and a wild man by night.
Hi, my name's Monroe. You've probably already noticed that I have incredibly blue eyes.
I do fashion photography.
I took a sponge ball, was pulling them out of a little girl's ear.
I'm looking for the goddess. Are you the goddess? Who is the goddess? The goddess is the woman, is a woman, is any woman, is all women.
I'm a 25-year subscriber to both Playboy and the New Yorker magazine.
No fatties. I want it all. No dopers, no smokers, no alcoholics.
I steal watches.
No posers.
We don't like to write checks.
No hamsters.
We don't like to take out the garbage.
What I'm doing right now is making a movie about World War II.
No Donna Juanitas.
And I'm currently involved in cleaning up toxic waste. Do you like cats? Are you looking
for me? Yeah, that's all out of context, and it doesn't really make sense when you hear it like that. But even in context, it barely makes sense. So just, yeah.
So I guess it's kind of like the dating game, and these guys are trying to tell their best attributes.
Well, here's what they did. It was, what year? It was 87?
Yeah, 1987.
They got 60 dudes, and they gave them each 1 minute to woo potential mates. So they had to really sell themselves in 1 minute. They gave them one take. And
they're as good at selling themselves as we are at selling our show.
Yeah.
But you're doing a pretty good job.
We won you over.
Imagine being married to one of those men, finding that footage, and then seeing that your husband, Maurice, is now was
a wild executive by day, wild man by night.
Yeah.
Who knew?
Oh, this is gold.
Because
I feel like this taps into that part of you that is the voyeur.
Oh, totally.
Because you get a glimpse into someone's life and
it's stuff you weren't meant to see in a lot of cases.
Right.
You know, like the McDonald's training video, you were meant to watch that by yourself in a smoky break room in 1989. And now you're watching it at the Music Box Theater on a huge screen, and it's cathartic. You know, you weren't supposed to see it.
But what was it? There's one. We were at an estate sale. There was a camcorder for sale, and I bought it. It was like $10, and I brought it back, and out popped a tape of whoever's estate sale it was. And I watched this thing, and I swear it was like a David Lynch movie. It must have been David Lynch's estate sale.
It was a man in a nightgown dancing to the Phantom of the Opera soundtrack and looking directly into the camera.
And there were edits?
And he's like dancing like Buffalo Bill. No, it's all
home
one
movie.
Continuous.
Oh, no, Buffalo Bill from Silence of the Lambs?
He was dancing like Buffalo Bill from Silence of the Lambs. Yeah, it was frightening. But yeah.
It's very frightening.
Yeah, yeah.
Put the lotion in the basket.
But most of the show, you know, the criterion for us is it has to be unintentionally funny. So whatever the video is trying to do, it has to make us laugh in some way.
Well, anytime anyone is trying to be funny, Nick, it's never funny.
Exactly.
No. Yeah, that's the most painful thing to watch is like old comedies from the 80s that were trying to be funny that fail. It's so hard and cringe-inducing to watch.
You mentioned that you're going to estate sales to, you know, where do you find these VHS tapes? And why am I envisioning that show American Pickers? And I feel like we need to pitch a show about you two traveling the country.
Yeah.
Small towns trying to find
VHS tapes. Oh, yeah, let's make the show. Tapes.
It'd be like that, except when they show the value of everything you found, it'd be nothing at the end of every episode.
Yeah, we have an office in Brooklyn, and we have 10,000 videos in there, and we got like a deadbolt, and we're like, why did we get a deadbolt? Nobody's going
to
break in here.
They're valuable only to us,
yeah,
really.
Nobody's going to steal these videos.
So why do this, guys? You're not making money off of this.
Yeah, it's, I don't know. We're not good at anything else.
We have very little else going on.
Yeah.
No, this you is have all families. We know.
Yeah,
we're jobs.
It's true.
This is our full-time job. It's been for 15 years. This is our 15-year anniversary. We do 120 shows a year across the U.S. and the U.K. and Canada. And so we don't make a good living, but we're doing what we love. And
we're just barely,
I stand corrected.
Yeah.
Just barely above the poverty line there. But it's a labor of love. So
yeah. We're comedy writers by trade and filmmakers. And so this kind of fell. This was originally we were making a documentary film. We kind of ran out of money for it. And we're like, you know, we have nothing of value that we can get a loan with. But we do have this incredible collection of VHS tapes we use to entertain our friends.
How many tapes and where do you store them?
We have 10,000 of them, and they're just, I mean, it's the biggest fire hazard in Brooklyn right now. I mean, like, they're falling off the shelf. The other thing is we do a weekly web series Tuesday nights at 8 p.m., and once we started doing that, people start sending us videos. So now we'll go back to our office on Monday, and we'll have a stack of awesome videos
and
waiting for
us. And
you
must have some sort of filing system, too.
Yeah, a little bit.
We do. There's categories, you know, like we'll have a category called Unusually Specific, and that's where
Machine Made Marbles.
Yeah, there's one called How to Spot Counterfeit Beanie Babies. That was another one that goes into that category.
And tell me, do you end up, do you play them off of a VHS tape, or what do you...
Yeah, we have a VCR, and then, but at the shows, we've digitized everything. We take a, we watch the VHS tapes on our VCRs in the office, but then we'll take in the parts that we want to show people, we'll digitize them. And
that's the hardest part is watching, because it's a needle in a haystack to find something that's good in the right way, you know? So we got to hold hands and dive in together, because most of these videos are so incredibly tedious, but we do find the good chunks. So we're basically doing God's work, is what I'm saying.
So we've got about 30 seconds left. Tell anyone listening why they should come out tonight.
Because it's stuff that you won't forget. Like, what? Even if you want to, you will not forget the stuff you're going to see tonight.
You're not going to see any of these videos on the internet either. This is all, you have to see it at our show. And let's see, there's full frontal male nudity. It's not erotic.
No.
It's more clinical. Is that selling it?
Ticket sales are through the roof.
It's really a comedy.
It's a comedy show. Yeah.
And how long is it?
85 minutes.
And it's at the Music Box
Theater.
That's
at the Music Box.
Tickets are available.
Yep. And did I mention full frontal male nudity?
Yeah,
I did. Okay.
Clearly, it will be burned into your memory, whether you want it or not. Thank you so much for joining us today, Joe Pickett and Nick Prewer from the Found Footage Festival. It's tonight, right?
Tonight.
At the Music Box Theater. Tickets are still available.
What time is it?
9:30.
Yep. All right, a late one. All right, we'll take a quick break. Welcome back. I am here with Maya Dukmasova. She is a staff writer at the Chicago Reader and really has been doing a lot of research on a particular topic about evictions in Chicago. And just recently, for the first time in 16 years, Chicago Eviction Court is now going to be on tape, something that you would presume happens in every courtroom, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, people, I think, when they imagine a court system, they imagine, you know, a courtroom, the kind you see on TV. You know, you've got lawyers in there. You've got people who are either suing each other or they're facing criminal charges and they're being prosecuted. And then, you know, in the image that we have in our minds, we always imagine that court reporter, the stenographer with their little machine, just transcribing the proceedings of court. So in Cook County, in the criminal court, you know, in the criminal justice system, in the criminal courts, there is a court reporter with the little machine in every courtroom. However, on the civil side of things, so whether it's traffic court that you go to if you're disputing a ticket or whatever, whether it's domestic relations stuff, like when you're doing divorce. Yep. You know, probate, like when there's like a dispute over an inheritance or eviction court, there's not a court reporter in these courtrooms on the civil side of the justice system.
I never knew that. I thought every court would have a recorder.
No. So there are certain, like in traffic court, for example, there are there's recording equipment and there has been recording equipment. They're making a record, so then you can request a transcript off the recorded tape. That's been there for a long time. But in eviction court, where in Cook County, there's about 30,000 eviction cases filed every year, and like most of them are in Chicago, obviously about 20,000 cases a year, and there hasn't been any kind of recording equipment or court reporters, like human beings making the transcript, in those courtrooms in since the early 2000s, since around like 2003. So this is really surprising to a lot of people, but it's been a huge problem, because essentially, if you wound up in eviction court, and most tenants who are taken to eviction court, they don't have lawyers. So about 80% of landlords who are filing for eviction against the tenant have a lawyer in court, but only about 10 to 12% of tenants ever have a lawyer representing them. So people show up to court. A lot of times people don't understand that, like, that first time they show up to court could be like they may be getting evicted that day, because the trials happen, you know, it takes like sometimes like 30 seconds for a judge to decide a case. Yeah. So if there's not a record of the proceedings, then there's no way to appeal anything that's happened in court, because there's no when you file an appeal, you have to submit, you know, your arguments about why you think your case should be reconsidered. And then there has to be some kind of transcript for the appellate court to take a look at what happened. So without that, you know, there's no way to appeal these cases.
So Maya, for somebody listening that maybe has never had to worry about eviction court, what about the assumption that just if you're in eviction court and you're, you know, someone's trying to evict you, it's because you just haven't paid your rent, and, you know, it's your job to pay your rent.
Right. So, I mean, it is most people that wind up in eviction court do wind up there because the landlord is saying, OK, they owe me rent and they haven't paid. However, people can also be evicted without any reason at all. In Chicago, we don't have any kind of what's called just cause eviction laws. So if a landlord wants you to be out at the end of the lease because maybe they want to rehab the property and lease it out for a higher amount of money, if you have a month-to-month rental agreement. So essentially, like, a lot of people will have a first year lease, runs out, they stay in the apartment, they keep paying their rent every month, but there's not like a paper lease that says, okay, you're here for a year. So lots and lots of people in Chicago have these month to month arrangements with their landlord. I lived on one of those for like 3 or 4 years with my last landlord. So it's quite common. So in that situation, when it's a month to month lease, at any given month, the landlord could say, you know what, I'm not taking your money this month. I want you out of here in 30 days. So it's very, anyone can wind up in eviction court, even if they've been steadily paying their rent. They don't want to move. They haven't been, you know, messing up the property or anything like that. And it's happening, especially in gentrifying neighborhoods now, you know, places like Logan Square on the northwest side, like Avondale, places where property values are increasing very quickly, where there's a lot of development interest. You know, somebody will come in, buy a building, and then want the old tenants out of there who had been, you know, maybe paying a lot less in rent than the landlord could make if they, you know, revamp the property a little bit and release it to someone else. So,
I love that you cleared up that stereotype, by the way. There's a lot of situations where someone could be a renter could find themselves in eviction court.
Yeah, and I don't want to understate the fact that like eviction is an issue that affects low-income people most. Mm-hmm. I mean, people a lot of people in the city of Chicago are paying more than half of their income in rent. A lot of people are paying like 75% of their incomes in rent. So when you're living, when more than a third of your paycheck every month goes to paying, you know, for housing expenses, you're considered to be rent burdened. And it's considered that like the federal standard is that if housing is affordable, if it doesn't eat up more than 30% of your monthly income. So
what about homeowners? Is this affecting homeowners as well or no?
Eviction, sure. I mean, it's not as big of an issue now, but at the height of the, you know, foreclosure crisis, yeah, this was, I mean, lots of people were underwater on their mortgages, weren't able to make payments, and then banks had to evict them. So it's a lot less common. These days, I mean, if there's another recession coming down the pike, maybe that'll change. But mostly, yeah, this is an issue affecting renters. There's 650,000 rental households in the city of Chicago, so a lot of people who potentially could be in some kind of situation where they end up in eviction court. The point I was trying to make is just that, like, rent is very expensive and unaffordable for most people in the city of Chicago. And if you're paying more than half of your income in rent, and if you're making like, you know, $30,000, $40,000 a year, you're at risk because a medical emergency, your car breaking down, something's wrong with your kids, you know, some sudden unexpected expense could put you in a situation where you can't make your rental payment.
And there are so many people that live paycheck to paycheck. Mm-hmm. And an emergency, whether it's medical or something that needs to be taken care of,
yeah,
can really destroy your life, make right. it look completely different in a short matter of time.
Yeah.
And especially if you don't have anyone to fall back on, if you don't have savings and you also don't have a family member that you can ask to borrow money.
Yeah, exactly. And I think there's a misconception out there that like people who live in lower income neighborhoods pay a lot less in rent, but that's actually not the case. I mean, places, some of the sort of lowest income areas of the city of Chicago on the south and west sides, usually, you know, like neighborhoods like Austin or South Shore, mostly African-American low-income neighborhoods. I mean, rent for a one-bedroom apartment in Austin or South Shore could easily be like, you know, $900 a month. So if you're a household, you know, if you're a parent, you've got kids, you might be if you're making like $30,000 a year, which is a lot of people in the city of Chicago, that, you know, there's one unexpected crisis that could land you in eviction court.
Well, you're listening to staff writer at the Chicago Reader, Maya Dukmasova, and she is talking about how for the first time in 16 years, Chicago eviction court is actually now going to be recorded. The proceedings that happen inside the courtrooms are going to be recorded. She's explained who might find themselves in eviction court. And after we take this short break, she'll explain why it's so important that these proceedings are on tape. So we hope you come back and join us. Okay, we have Maya Dukmasova here. She's a staff writer at the Chicago Reader. So tell us why it's important that these proceedings in Chicago eviction court should be recorded.
Yeah, so without their recording, it's impossible to appeal any judge's decision. So there's 5 eviction courtrooms in the city of Chicago. I should say also that in suburban Cook County, our court system here in Cook County is divided between the city of Chicago, and then there's like 5 other municipal districts that are capture the suburbs. Eviction cases happen there too. Say you live, you know, in Markham or you live in Bridgeview or whatever, you're going to be, if you're dealing with an eviction, it's going to be at the courthouses out there. There's still no recording equipment and no court reporters out there. So this funding that paid for these recorders to be installed in Chicago, it came from the state, and it was like a 2-year battle to get it. And a lot of legal aid and advocacy groups like fought to get this money allocated to pay for this recording equipment. So there's 5 eviction courtrooms that handle about 20,000 cases in Chicago every year, and they're all at the Daly Center. And basically, without a record, of what happens in the courtroom. There's no way to challenge any judge's decision. And this is just as important for landlords as it is for tenants, because, you know, a judge could decide in favor of a tenant, which happens not that frequently. I mean, most eviction cases that are filed, like 60% of them end with the tenant being ordered out. And the other 40% are, you know, the cases are dismissed. But and oftentimes it's like the landlord would agree to dismiss the case because the tenant is saying, okay, like I'll move out anyway. So, you know, a landlord could also disagree with a decision the judge made, and you can't appeal without the record unless you hired your own court reporter and brought them to court, which some people do. Some, like lawyers, know to do that, but it's obviously extremely expensive. It's cumbersome. It doesn't assure equal access to justice for everybody who might be finding themselves in the court system. So the other thing, too, that's important about the proceedings of the courtrooms being on the record and on tape is that it also kind of keeps, as one attorney told me when I was doing this story, she represents landlords, and the way she said it was like, you know, it keeps everybody on the up and up. Like, it makes sure when judges know that they're being recorded, when all the lawyers know they're being recorded, we're more likely to have appropriate, judicious behavior from everybody involved. And in eviction court in particular, for years, there's been documented cases, you know, or attorneys and other people who work in the court system have reported inappropriate statements made by judges, not just like wrong interpretations of the law that you could challenge with an appeal, but like judges saying things that were derogatory to tenants or landlords. Judges, and usually the bias is expressed against tenants. And, you know, what do you do? Like, if you're a lawyer, you hear this in court, but you don't have a record of it, there's it's really hard to fight, you know, or argue that a judge says something inappropriate.
I feel like it's human nature that if you're being recorded and mm-hmm. you know that people are listening to you and they're going to be judging what you have to say, that everyone's going to act a little, be a right. little more careful about yeah. what they say and how they say it.
And what's interesting is that since this recording equipment began to be installed about 4 months ago, I think some judges who have been in the eviction court system for a long time feels like it rubs them the wrong way that now things are on the record. But it's like, this isn't a matter of surveillance. This is right. a court system. This is a court. This is public proceedings.
And it's tax dollars yes. that are paying for their jobs.
Yes, it's tax dollars paying for the jobs. The courts are, in this country, a public proceeding, you know, unless you're talking about like very specific kind of cases involving juveniles or whatever. There's absolutely no reason why court proceedings should not be recorded. And, you know, if you hear about judges, and I talk about this in my story, which people can see at chicagoreader.com, or if you're in the city, you can pick up the Reader newspaper in any of our free boxes. In the story, I talk about a case of a specific judge who's expressed some skepticism about the value of these recording systems. But this particular judge has also had a track record of saying biased things from the bench, especially against tenants. So, you know, I think that for the most part, though, most judges are happy to have the system.
Is it very different in the suburbs than in the city?
There's a lot fewer cases in the suburbs. Okay. It's, you know, the volume that they have to process is way lower, obviously, but the dynamics are the same. You know, it's people wind up in eviction court, you know, either through no fault of their own or they've fallen behind on rent, you know, because of a financial emergency.
And Maya, what about this? I don't know if it's true or not, this theory. I feel like I've heard from people say that it's very difficult to evict somebody. Is that true or not?
So it's more difficult to evict someone in the city of Chicago than in a lot of other places, because Chicago has this residential landlord tenant ordinance, which is a city law that basically affords various rights to tenants, and especially in situations where somebody's living in a very poorly maintained apartments, tenants are have a right to withhold rent based on the conditions of their units. Now, most tenants don't have any idea of how to actually properly assert those rights and go through the process of officially withholding their rent and all of that. So even when a tenant, and again, my story captures this, just this kind of thing, where the tenant I wrote about had stopped paying rent because her apartment was cockroach infested and a lot of things. There were a lot of maintenance problems, building code violations. The landlord wasn't doing anything about it. She was like, okay, I'm not going to pay you rent until you fix these things.
So she had the money to pay, but yes. He wasn't.
And she had lived there for 5 years and had any issues.
And never missed her rent.
No.
She was fine.
And so then the building was sold to a new owner. The new owner, like, wasn't addressing any of the maintenance issues. And so she started withholding her rent. She thought when he took her to eviction court, she came with a packet of photos documenting the conditions in her unit. She thought that the judge would see these and side with her in this matter. But because she didn't actually go through the proper formal process of asserting her rights under the landlord tenant ordinance, it didn't matter. Like, the judge didn't even care to look at her photos. He, mm-hmm. he just evicted her. So, a lot of people, in the suburbs, there isn't as many tenant protections. And I think that the perspective for landlords and people who represent landlords, of why it's hard to evict people is because it actually takes quite a long time. If a tenant gets a lawyer and they know how to, assert their rights, they know if they want to have like an actual trial, if they want to go through a proper court process. It's also quite expensive to file eviction cases, especially in the city of Chicago. So it's harder to evict a tenant here than it is in a lot of other places. But I think what's quote unquote hard about it is just that it takes time. When people end up in front of the judge, when the landlord and tenant are in front of the judge, in most cases, the judge sides with the landlord. Mm-hmm. So once the decision is being made, things are really stacked in favor of the landlords.
Well, thank you so much, Maya Dugmasova, for being with us. She's a staff writer at the Chicago Reader. And be sure to follow all of her reporting at chicagoreader.com. Doing important work. Yep. Thank you so much, Maya.
And I'm on Twitter as well at MDOUKMAS.
Awesome. We're going to take a quick break. So it is already the beginning of November, and you know what that means. Time is going to start flying because Halloween happens, and then before you know it, it's Thanksgiving, and then it's the holidays, Christmas, Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, and then New Year's Eve. And on top of that, it's brutally cold. I feel like we're entering a season that's full of joy, but it's also a time when the differences between the haves and the have-nots is truly amplified. And an organization that's been doing good work for a long time is Meals on Wheels. And if you're not familiar with them, they eliminate hunger and isolation for Chicago's homebound seniors and individuals with disabilities. And on the line right now, we have Amy McCarty from Meals on Wheels Chicago, and she is the board president. Hi, Amy. How are you?
Hi, I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Of course. Can you tell us a little bit more about Meals on Wheels and what you guys do, especially here in Chicago?
Meals on Wheels Chicago is a fundraising organization that raises funds in conjunction with the City of Chicago, and we provide both weekend and holiday meals for homebound seniors and persons with disabilities, individuals who would not otherwise be able to get these meals for themselves. So it is our goal to ensure that they have nutritious meals in their home to hope to maximize their independence.
How important is this, and how many people are you helping throughout the year?
Approximately 8,500 Chicagoans are recipients of Meals on Wheels Chicago. And as I said, we do it in conjunction with the City of Chicago. They provide the weekly meals, and we provide the weekend and holiday meals. So there is never a day that a Chicagoan who is in need receives a meal. Approximately 84% of the meal recipients, the Meals on Wheels Chicago driver is the only contact that they have with a live person all week. And I think that gives you an idea of these people and the isolation that some of them face and the vital lifeline that Meals on Wheels Chicago provides for them, not only the personal contact, but the actual nutritious meal.
And I know that they're homebound, but I assume that gets even more amplified with the holiday season, being isolated.
It does. I mean, as the holidays approach and people are celebrating their holidays with their families and friends, the isolation of individuals who don't have that connection, who don't have family or friends available to meet with them, to break bread with them, to bring them a nutritious meal is is amplified. And that is where the work of Meals on Wheels Chicago really comes in and really makes sure that these people aren't alone, that they have a contact with people who care about them. I mean, these drivers know the people on their route. They know the individuals who are receiving their meals. They sometimes, when someone doesn't answer the door, they're the ones calling for well-being checks and making sure that these people have meals and contact with humans.
Well, I know that you do your good works throughout the year, but I also imagine with our weather issues, too, when it comes to the cold winter, I mean, that takes some real dedication for the drivers to get out there and make sure that these meals reach the people that need them the most.
Absolutely. These drivers are dedicated people. They have long-term relationships with these people. The work that they provide is vital, and not just in the winter, but even in the summer when we have the extreme heat. I mean, the checking on these people, making sure that they're okay, making sure that they have what they need is something that these drivers provide in addition to bringing them their meal.
When it comes to people with disabilities, is that the entire age range?
Persons over 60 is for the elderly population, but persons with disabilities, it can be under the age of 60. There is no wait list for the City of Chicago's Meals on Wheels program, so individuals who are interested in receiving those meals can apply, and they can be provided those meals if they qualify.
So should they just go to mealsonwheelschicago.org, or is there also a phone number that they can call in case somebody isn't necessarily internet savvy?
That is a question. Mealsonwheelschicago.org. The City of Chicago actually provides the services, so you can call the 311 helpline and ask to get the numbers for Meals on Wheels Chicago, because we work in conjunction with the city. It is a city program that we supplement, and that's what's important to know, is that the city provides these services as well. So if they are interested in applying for these services, they can go online, but obviously most people are not internet savvy, so
yes.
Making those phone calls.
Days I'm not internet savvy.
Myself as well.
Well, I
guess during this call, I learned how internet savvy I wasn't.
Well, I'm glad you made it, though. Thank you so much for joining us. I get that it's part of a city program, so tax dollars go to support this as well, which I think is a good use of tax funds. I don't mind contributing. But you also can use extra donations, and now is the time before the end of the year. And, of course, people have a lot of options in terms of giving back. There's so many great organizations out there. Somebody might think, because you do have name recognition for your organization, that you guys are doing okay and don't need any extra help. What would you say to that?
Well, I would say that that is incorrect. We can always use the extra help. And as I said, even though we work in conjunction with the City of Chicago, that funding does not provide weekend meals. It does not provide holiday meals. Without the dollars that we raise through Meals on Wheels Chicago, these individuals would not have weekend meals or holiday meals. And so this funding is vital. We seek in this event, and this is our largest event for Meals on Wheels Chicago, to raise $500,000 so that we can provide over 150,000 meals in 2020. And name recognition alone is not important. People have to step up and get involved, and we are asking for them to financially support this organization. As I said, we are primarily a fundraising organization, but those funds are vital to continuing to provide those weekend and holiday meals. Additionally, Meals on Wheels, when the funding is available, does provide shelf-stable meals, which are, you know, in addition to the nutritious hot meal that gets delivered on shelf-stable meals are things that can be stored in the pantry, canned goods, things of other nature, things that do not expire and can be used when weather is bad and when you want to supplement the existing meals. And Meals on Wheels Chicago provides those shelf-stable meals conjunction with Open Kitchen, who provides the meals for Meals on Wheels Chicago.
So your big event that you're talking about, it's the 31st Annual Celebrity Chef Ball. It's going to be this Friday at the Morgan Manufacturing in West Loop, I think, right? Or
it is, yeah. Yes. It's a little bit West Loop. It's a little bit north of the Loop.
Okay.
Yeah, Westtown, I would say,
okay.
Is where it is.
Gotcha.
Exactly. It's a repurposed manufacturing building. Very cool space. This is our biggest event.
To be an awesome event. You still have tickets available, right?
We do. We have tickets available. We have two portions to the event. There is a VIP chef's table, which is A 6-course meal provided in an intimate dining experience by chefs who are directly working right in front of you preparing the meal. And there's a live auction. And then there's the chef tasting party, which is a dine around experience where guests are able to sample food from over 40 chefs, mixologists, pastry chefs. So some people come and do both. I have done both for many years. Some people decide that the chef's table is the right fit for them, or the chef's tasting is the right fit for them. But it is a fantastic event. I hear every year after the event how much fun people had, and also how glad they are that they participated to raise money for Meals on Wheels Chicago.
So, Amy, you are a lawyer by day. How did you get involved with Meals on Wheels, and why is this something you're passionate about?
I am a lawyer, yes. I started in hunger relief when I was in college in Ann Arbor, Michigan, and I worked for Food Gathers, which was a food cleaning organization. When I came here to Chicago, I had a dear friend who was very involved with Meals on Wheels Chicago, Chandra Ram, and I asked her to...
Oh, I know Chandra. She's fantastic. Food writer and cookbook author.
Yes, she is. And she's one of my dear friends. And I said, please, can you help me get involved with Meals on Wheels? And so I became a member of the Celebrity Chef Ball Committee. And through that work, I became a member of the board. And now I'm the board chair.
Well, thank you so much, Amy, for joining us. Really appreciate it. I hope you can get back to enjoying your nice weekend with family. I know you were getting away to Arizona, so enjoy that nice hot weather before you have to come back.
I will, and thank you so much for having me, and thank you everyone who's listening, and please get your tickets for the event. We are looking forward to a fabulous event and raising money for Meals on Wheels Chicago.
Thanks so much, Amy. Okay, so over 80 top chefs and mixologists come together to celebrate at Morgan Manufacturing this Friday, November 8th. So it's a great event, definitely something if you want to give back and also have a great time while doing it. And I know that you're probably going to be inundated very soon with a lot of great, fantastic organizations that need help. But if this one is something that piques your interest, hope you'll go, because I'll see you there. I'll be there also enjoying all the wonderful libations and food. So it's going to be a fantastic night. And of course, it's all going for an incredible cause. So, so we're going to take a quick break right now, and we'll be back for the last 15 minutes of the show. The great Amy Guth is in studio with me. How are you, Miss Amy?
Hey, how are you? I'm going to put that on my business card. The great Amy Guth.
I never get to see you, so this is fantastic.
We're always either just, you're running in the door when I'm running out the door. We never get to hang out. Hello.
And I love, hello to you. And you just look so cheery and bright-eyed and bushy-tailed. I had the craziest morning this morning. I can't even tell you. I felt so harried and insane because...
It happens.
Well... So I don't know if you know, but I am a cat owner. I never intended to be a cat lady.
Okay. But here we are.
Yes, I am a cat lady. My cat is getting older. I basically inherited her from a friend that passed away, a very good friend. And so I love this cat so much because I love my friend so much. And that's why I adopted the cat. And basically, she's getting older. She's turning 10 years old and she seemed really bored. So now I was like, okay, she needs a friend. So I adopted a little tiny kitten.
Aww.
Actually from Pete Zimmerman and his wife.
Yeah.
Who's Justin Kaufman's producer. So, and this morning I wake up and the poor little guy got sick.
Oh dear.
And so he tracked the litter over the apartment. So I'm waking up. That's the first thing I wake up to.
Ooh.
And then not to be outdone by the little kitten, you know, my big girl cat, she's like, okay, well, you're giving him a lot of attention. So then she proceeds to get sick too.
Oh, good.
So this is my life. I'm like, what am I doing?
So you have some cleaning ahead of you today,
is what you're saying. Lots of cleaning ahead of me. And I woke up this morning at 6 a.m. This is what I woke up to.
You know what? I was also an accidental cat person.
You were.
I found a little kitten a long time. Rest in peace, the great Chairman Meow of blessed memory.
That is the best name
he was a sweet
ever.
Boy. He was a very sweet boy. He was a tiny kitten. I fed him with a little eyedropper. I found him on the side of the road on a road trip. And, that was a Thursday. And I was like, okay, I'll get him healthy, find him a home. And by Sunday morning, I was like, who's the kitty? Who's the baby? And I loved this cat. And he, I'd never had cats. I grew up with dogs. And I had this cat. And I was so attached to him. And I didn't know how to do cats. So I sort of treated him like a dog. Like, he knew how to fetch and things like that.
There are a lot of cats that know how to fetch. And I know that people feel like, why does everyone have to be so divisive?
I know.
It's like you have to be a cat person or a dog person.
You can just love animals.
You can just love cats and dogs.
That's right.
We can live in peace. And but truth be told, I do think cats get a bad rap. And most people that end up owning a cat, they do. It happens just the way you described.
Cats find you.
Yeah.
That's who, exactly. They pick you and they, okay, human.
Listen, human, you will
this is
feed
what we're
me,
doing. Yeah.
Take care of me, pay for me.
Yeah, my cat used to, if he felt like I wasn't paying enough attention to him, he would also, he would get in the litter box and just flick litter out of it. Or he would walk up to a stack of papers and just be like, he would make eye contact with me and just be like, boop, and knock the papers over.
But listen to how smart cats are, because they can be total jerks to you.
Oh, cats can be jerks.
And you still love them. Yeah. Tremendously.
And I think people think they're so aloof and what. My cat was not that way at all.
Had he a lot of personality.
Oh, he was always laying on me and snuggly. He was very sweet.
So I do have to clean up my apartment when I get home. But
yeah, so
the
that's
other
thing
that's happening is I called my vet because I said, okay, I've got to take the kitten because the kitten was really sick. So I was like, okay, I got to go get them some medicine. Right.
Yeah.
And the vet was like, oh, we only have an appointment at 11:30. I was like, well, I'm on the radio till noon. So I think I have to thank my friend for going and getting the cat and taking it to the vet. So they're at the vet right now. So all will be well.
Cats really love that. Cats love to get in a little carrier and go to the vet. That's
I'm going
to
have a really fun Saturday night.
So your cats are going to have payback then.
Yes.
They're going to do something to retaliate for that vet trip.
What's going on your show today?
Well, cats. No, we're not talking about cats. So I'm going to be talking with Trip Mickle, who is a reporter at Wall Street Journal, about how Apple's approaching the launch of their streaming service, which is a thing.
Oh, yes.
Griffin and I have been talking about that for a while, and it is now a thing. So we're going to be...
So now not only am I going to have my Hulu subscription, my Netflix, my Amazon Prime Video, but now I've got to do...
You got to do Apple, too.
So by the time I pay for all of those subscriptions, I could just have had, like, cable.
That's right. But, you know, the thing is, you don't have to be on customer service with the, you know, I feel like you have to be mean to work at a customer service for cable.
True. It's true.
They're so
or
mean.
You have to be on hold for a long time, or you're talking to somebody from the Philippines. That happens to me
which
a lot.
Which is fine. I don't care where anybody is, as long as they're cool. That's
I know,
all
as
I
long
care
as they're
about.
Helping me.
Yeah, just help me out.
Especially when you call, when it's the customer care line is based somewhere foreign, and it ends up being they try to be really helpful, actually. Yeah.
I just want helpful. That's all I want.
So are they going to create their own content or no?
Yeah, there's some original content. There's things like that. So we're going to talk about that. And then I'm going to talk with Liat Rothschild, who is the founder of a company called Pact with Purpose. I have actually I've looked at this company before. I think they're really interesting. It's kind of, you know, like you have gift bags and gift boxes, things like that you give people, like a gift basket of stuff. All the stuff is really responsibly sourced. It's really an interesting idea and it's local. So we're going to talk with her about that.
I love anything local, and I love anything responsibly sourced. If you're able to do it, it's always better if you do it. You know, make the world a better place.
I mean, we've been jerks to the planet. We need to clean up our act a little bit and do some things.
Totally agree. Okay, so tonight, are you ready for daylight savings time?
Oh yeah,
that's tonight.
Apparently not.
Well, it's technically really Sunday morning, but I'm saying tonight. But I'm on mentalfloss.com, and here are some interesting tidbits. Amy, you tell me if you already knew this stuff. Benjamin Franklin apparently is the one that proposed a similar concept to daylight saving time. And he was half joking when he suggested it. And that was back in 1784.
I didn't know that, but I believe that he was joking because it's no good comes from it.
So you don't like having a little extra time?
I love extra time, but it screws you up for a week.
Oh, really?
You know,
just that hour.
Inevitably.
You're a very fine-tuned machine. You must have a very good schedule. My schedule's all over the place.
Mine's all over the place. And that's why I'm like, I must get up at this time. I must do this. So it throws me off a little bit.
The official credit for the daylight saving time idea goes to a bug collector. It was an entomologist who did most of his bug hunting at night, soon became frustrated by how early the sun set during the summer months.
Interesting.
He reasoned that springing the clocks forward would allow more daylight for bug collecting, along with other evening activities.
Okay, but that doesn't change the sun. It just changes your watch.
Right.
He just needs to, like, get up earlier.
Now, daylight saving time gained renewed popularity during the energy crisis. However, it may actually be an energy waster, potentially.
I could see that.
And Amy, along the lines of what you were concerned about, daylight saving time is also a health hazard.
How's that?
It says losing the extra hour of sleep by... Oh, wait. Am I on the wrong... I'm on the wrong thing.
I'm talking about a totally different thing.
We're falling back.
I did notice that right now on the, you know, the signs on the highway that
are
like...
Oh, man. We're falling back. I screwed that up. I'm on the wrong article.
Yeah, spring forward,
fall. Falling back.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
What am I on here? Oh, yeah. No, I'm on the right thing. Yeah, totally.
But I did notice on the highways right now, there's a little slogan they've had that says something like, this weekend, drunk drivers get an extra hour in jail. That's like a way to, I guess.
Wow.
Somebody thought about that very hard. But I thought
that is frightening. We can continue to think about that as we go to break. I know that at the top of the hour, we're going to check in with the news with James Sears. And thanks so much, guys, for having me. I really appreciate it. Hope to see you during the week, Monday through Friday, on The Steve Cochran Show.